720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us. Lots to do today, and we will be checking in upstairs in the newsroom to keep you updated on all the headlines and weather and traffic and all that good stuff. But let's get right to it because there's so much to talk about today. We're joined by Will Flanagan, who's the GM of Chicago Inno. You know Chicago Inno, our good friends over there, always stopping in. We're always happy to see you. Welcome to the program, Will.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, oh my gosh, there's so much going on. I was looking at the Chicago Inno website shortly before the program. Every time I look at it, there's so much new stuff on there. There's so many things happening right now in the business and startup world in Chicago, which is very exciting.
It's really exciting. There's a ton going on. It's end of the year season, which means you're looking back at everything that happened, but that doesn't mean that news kind of stops. So there's still things happening. So we're trying to combine those two efforts, and it just has made for a really busy, exciting past couple weeks.
Definitely. And, I think that's a kind of a mark of an entrepreneur. It seems like smaller companies and people that are wearing a lot of hats, they don't take that downtime when a lot of people go, well, it's the holidays. We're going to hang it up. We'll start this in mid-January. You can see, like, the people that are hustling keep hustling through the holidays, and headlines happening this time of year for sure.
It's funny, and yes, you notice that, and there's no stop. There's so many people we talk to, and for some reason, I guess I've just defaulted to one of my white noise questions to just break the ice is, oh, hey, is this a busy time of the year for you? Are you a seasonal business? And like nobody anymore answers yes. If I'm talking to a tech entrepreneur, it's busy. Whether it's January, April, heading into vacation, heading out of vacation. So that's kind of, I don't know why I still ask that question because I get the same answer every time. But that's like why I kind of love covering this space is, they want to stay busy, and they're always busy. They're always hungry. And the second I get that, it's a downtime for us, I'll probably know something's not going right.
Something's up. That's going to be a good way to kind of keep a pulse on things for sure. And so there's a great list that is at Chicago Inno. You can check this out. It is 17 startups to watch in 2017. Some of them started this year, though not exclusively on this list. But it seems like this list is made up of people that are really revving up to do great things in the year ahead. Tell us about that list.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of our most popular pieces of the year every year. So this is the third time we've done this. And, there's really no hard metric. We cover this space as aggressively as anyone. We know what's happening here in the Chicago ecosystem. So we look at, heading into 17, the 17 startups we're keeping our eye on. And what's really, really unique about this year's list is that we have three people on our startups to watch list who have, sold companies previously for $1 billion. And to me, that's when I think back and look back at the year in tech, that's the big thing I'm hanging my hat on, is that Chicago Tech's really growing up. It's not just first time, even second time serial entrepreneurs. You have these really experienced founders. You have Eric Lakofsky, who founded Groupon. He's working on a company called Tempus. Tempus is basically an operating system for cancer research. You have Chris Gladwin, who's starting Ocean. Chris Gladwin was the founder of CleverSafe. CleverSafe sold for $1.3 billion in 2015 to IBM. And Ocean is his new startup. Hasn't really said what it is, but it's going to be a game-changing thing in IT. He's hiring aggressively here in the city. And then Catalytic is another one from Sean Chu, who is the former CTO of Fieldglass, another company that sold for over $1 billion. And Catalytic is doing some amazing thing in B2B software. So these are three startups that we have on our startups to watch list, which is usually kind of populated with first-time founders, maybe student founders. And to me, this is what you need to know about what's happening in Chicago Tech now is, yes, we do have these student founders on this list. But, man, those top three names, you pit that against any kind of hub, maybe outside of the host. And I don't know if you have three names like that working on something new. It's exciting.
Yeah, right. That is an exciting time. And I think that it seems like we are really getting, we're really holding our own, especially kind of in that biotech, medical tech space.
Totally.
With the investment the University of Chicago has made with their labs and their kind of incubator that they're running down there. It just seems like we're really hanging on to that piece really well, in addition to other spots. But that in particular, like we are really, really kind of owning that space, it seems like.
Chicago Tech does a really good job of leaning into its advantages, knowing what it's good at and doing it. You're not going to, you're probably not going to have Snapchat or a Snapchat type service created here, and that's okay. You're going to have a ton of pragmatic B2B companies born here, one, because customers are here. It's one of these biggest cities in the country that has all of this proximity to Fortune 100, Fortune 500 businesses. There used to be that saying, you know, you go to the coast to build and you come to the Midwest to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, thanks to third-party platforms and just cloud technology in general, you can build anywhere. So why not build where you can sell? So we're always going to be very, very good at B2B. We also have, you know, it's not the coolest thing to say, but we're kind of a hub of supply chain innovation. We have a ton of really cool logistics tech companies. We obviously have a lot of parking startups, which is funny. You think of, oh, what a coincidence, but it's not a coincidence. It makes sense that this city that has this history and legacy of logistics and transportation is also on the next wave of things coming down the pipe. And then another big thing is marketing tech. You know, we've been in advertising capital for years. Of course, the kind of infusion of tech into marketing and advertising is going to happen here. So to me, that's when I think back to 2016 as well, you see these kind of inherent examples that exist in Chicago just for one reason or another, the tech community kind of going all in on.
Yeah. And what other things stand out to you about this list that maybe things that you're most excited about when you look at that list that seems like it'll kind of turn or maybe broaden things a little bit or maybe change course for us a little bit in the year ahead?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what really excites me about this list is just going back to the company that Eric Lukofsky is working on, Tempus. I mean, there are some really cool businesses on here. And you know, I kind of just explained that Chicago is this B2B hub. And, you know, maybe that's not the most exciting thing in the world. But Tempus is, again, they're trying to build the operating system for cancer. They're taking on cancer treatment, which is amazing. That is such a moonshot project. And you don't really see a ton of moonshot projects outside the coast for one reason or another, whether it's there's more of that venture capital investment that can, you know, really buy into a big game-changing idea that is 10, 15 years away. So for me, it's really exciting that here in Chicago, you have one of these kind of earth-changing ideas, whether it works or not, but it's being built here. So Tempus is really exciting. And then I love Rise Science is super cool. They're a startup that basically we talked about them with Steve a couple weeks ago. They work with major sports teams on making sure their athletes are optimizing sleep. They determine that sleep is basically the most powerful performance-enhancing drug in the world. If you sleep, you're going to be better. So they've built software and a platform to make sure it identifies how much sleep you need as a player, as a you know, stellar athlete. And it buzzes you. It gets you to sleep. It works on custom sleep patterns. And it's just really cool. It's working with the Chicago Bulls. It's working with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I just kind of love that startup.
Yeah.
They started a very traditional kind of entrepreneur story. They began by you know, they didn't have the software automated, so they had to, like, text players when to go to bed. So going back
this
to explaining the scrappiness.
Reminder.
Go to bed, you guys. This is your sleep platform.
Knock it off with the bottle service in the club. Time to go to bed.
Please go to bed.
Well, I love that. And I think at a time when the narrative is, you know, earlier we were kind of saying the default question or the thing we just kind of say that maybe we need to tweak because it's kind of falling a little bit empty. I think a lot of people say to busy people, oh, when do you sleep?
Yeah.
And I think we are starting, for as long as we've kind of glamorized sacrificing lunch or sleep or whatever, I'm excited to see that like wearables are really starting to pay attention to sleep and how important that is. And, you know, Arianna Huffington's book was all about sleep and how much we need to give ourselves a break. And now, you know, things like this, that's very exciting to see.
Yeah, it's a great reminder, too, when you see all of these supplements that are out there and all of these just kind of the things you can kind of cheat, like all of these cheat codes you can apply to working and being more efficient. Whereas at the end of the day, just sleep more.
Just go to bed. Take a nap. Go to bed. You know what? My grandfather is nearly 100 years old, and he's long said the key to longevity is a nap every single day.
So done.
Maybe he solved this a long time ago. We're talking with Will Flanagan, the GM of Chicago Inno. We'll be right back in just a bit to continue this conversation on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, in for Steve Bertrand today. Thanks for being with us. We're hanging out with Will Flanagan, who's the GM of Chicago Inno, a regular guest on this program. Always a joy to have you around, Will. So there's lots of great stuff. If you go over to Chicago Inno, you will see all kind of cool stories. There's a really interesting story about Airbnb numbers from the past year and all about co-working in Chicago. There was a story that really caught my eye that was really interesting about the 10 biggest Chicago tech deals of 2016. That is really, really interesting, because just in the last segment, we were talking about how it's no longer a place where you get going and then head to the coast to really do business. There's real business happening here, and we're really kind of owning it in a lot of areas. But these tech deals really just kind of go to prove that point, that there's some very, very big deals happening right here in our own backyard.
Yeah, 100%. When you talk about kind of surrounding ecosystems and how every city is competing over a lot of the same talent and trying to cement and build yourself as we are the hub for innovation, you realize there's never going to be the center. And you don't need to be. All you need to be is a place to build a great business. And Chicago is a place to build a great business. It has its advantages, its disadvantages. But again, like, there's great stuff being built here. And what I'm excited about from this top 10 tech deals is, you know, if you had to boil it down to a sentence, tech tends to work on these in optics. And you would look at it and you would see, ooh, venture capital dollars in 2016 are down year over year. And, you know, you'd put a period at the end of that sentence and say, uh-oh, dream's over, we're in trouble. And you realize that it's been a healthier year for venture capital investment in the state. And that's because if you look at those numbers, they tend to be weighted by just these mega deals that don't speak to the sustainability of an ecosystem. Whereas this year, it's going to be one of the first years, really since 2001, that every quarter is going to be at or over $200 million. So if you were to look at a graph in years past, you have, you know, one bar really high, then it really low, one bar really high. And yes, there's good stuff going on, but it's hard to take the temperature of the ecosystem when it's up and down, up and down. Whereas this year, you kind of look at it and it's like, wow, it's been pretty steady from January all the way through December. And it's really reflected in this list. If you looked at the top 10 tech deals last year, that total number was $773 million. This year, the top 10 are total $477. So they're all kind of around the same size. And again, that just to me speaks like something where I would feel more confident saying we're in great shape for next year versus looking at those highly fluctuating numbers. And a lot of the deals on the list, kind of going back to our last conversation, really play into the strengths of Chicago. Sprout Social, Signal, these are marketing tech companies that are building software and platforms that help businesses be better businesses. Number one on the list, the one kind of outlier amongst this list, the one funding that was above $40 million, was SMS Assist, raised $150 million in June. And SMS Assist is, again, your kind of Chicago tech company. Hard to explain, pragmatic, but what they do is they provide property management software for over 20,000 subcontracted affiliates. So they have a platform that helps property manage, maintain multiple buildings. That $150 million that they raised in June, it gave them a valuation over $1 billion. So in tech, that's kind of a big deal, because if you're a private company with a valuation over $1 billion, you're a unicorn. And right, it's a silly name and word and label, but optically, it's exciting when Chicago gets a unicorn. Again, unicorns are mystical beasts that live on the coasts. And no, we got a couple here in the Midwest, so it's always exciting when we get one.
In the show Silicon Valley, the guy that had the painting with the three commas, he's like, that's the comma. That third comma.
That's what we need. Yeah.
Right.
So there's a lot on the list I'm excited about. The other thing is, you know, we talked again a lot of logistics, B2B. Those are hard things to kind of explain to maybe someone who's new to tech, and maybe that's an disadvantage that Chicago has, is that you can't kind of, you don't have that, you know, points to a snap, you know, something that everybody understands. But that's why I'm excited that the number two biggest deal on this list is Home Chef, which is a startup. It's a meal kit delivery service. They raised $40 million in September and $10 million in May. So they're really fast growing in a very crowded space, and they're doing great work. So I was really pleased to see kind of a B2C startup on this list that high.
Mm-hmm. Right, because the rest of it, you're looking at, you know, you look across it, it looks like a lot of B2B, a lot of medical tech, a lot of logistics, a lot of those kind of things. Really wonderful list here. Everybody, head to Chicago Inno so you can see this list for yourself. And they've done a great job of breaking it down. You'll see like what the deal was, when it happened, who invested, and what they do. So it really breaks down what all these companies do. And it's an exciting time for Chicago Tech, because we're holding our own, and it's cool. And we're a big player in a big space. So it's very, very cool to see. Will Flanagan, thank you so much for being with us. We will see you next time.
Thank you so much.
All right. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with me. Still lots to do on the program today. We are joined now by phone by the founder of Wisco Pop, which is a craft soda. We think of craft cocktails and craft beer and that kind of thing, but soda is making headway in that craft space too. Welcome to the program, Austin.
Thanks for having me.
Certainly. So let's talk a bit about this craft soda movement. Is this just kind of the next logical beverage to get on board the craft in the craft space, or is this triggered by something bigger in kind of the group mind here?
Yeah, you know, I'm not totally positive on it. I would say from our standpoint at Wisco Pop, we're just trying to create a delicious beverage made by whole ingredients. I mean, I definitely see the word craft being thrown around a lot, but then when you look at the ingredients, it doesn't look like such.
Right, right. I mean, you see, it's one of those things like natural. Any label can say it's natural, but in fact, it takes a special company to really be paying attention to that and do something about it. And
That's right.
And so in reading about and getting to know Wisco Pop, it seems that there is a really great commitment to local. And why is that so important to you as a company?
Well, actually, our biggest overall value is organics. And partly because it just shows more transparency to our ingredient side, because that was something that really interests me, because I'd worked in the food industry for a number of years, and just having that transparency, I think some of the organic stuff definitely shows. So like our strawberry soda has just strawberries, lemon, and sugar, and that's it. It doesn't have anything else onto it. There's no natural flavor, and so when people drink it, they're like, oh my God, this doesn't taste like that artificial strawberry. I'm like, yeah, that's because it's real strawberries.
You know, I'm glad you said natural flavor. That's an interesting thing, because that's such an interesting catch-all in the food industry of what legally can go underneath the umbrella of natural flavor. Once you start digging into it, it's kind of a terrifying rabbit hole. So I'm glad you mentioned that. That it's really, you know, having just a few ingredients, much less ones that you can pronounce, could certainly go very far in the consumer mind.
Right, yeah, and I think, you know, the word natural is kind of just ubiquitous, and, you know, I think marketing has really devalued what we want to see in the marketplace by selling, you know, things that are, I don't want to say lies, because I don't definitely think it's that. I think it's more just, you know, everybody's trying to curb the story and get you to believe their story, but that story, if you turn to the ingredient side, isn't, you know, matching up with the value that they're trying to offer you.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so Wisco Pop started after a Kickstarter. Tell me about that, because, you know, crowdfunding is such a thing we talk about a lot on this program. I've been through one. Lots of people have done one. And they're really interesting because they make you really polish and refine your idea very, very quickly. So what was that experience like for you on Kickstarter?
Well, I had already been in business for about a year and a half, and I kind of just got this jump up and go thing happen, and I was like, we're going to do a Kickstarter. And so we planned that all out within probably like 2.5 weeks of me deciding that we're going to do it. But within our time frame, which was 30 days, I think we got $24,000 on the Kickstarter. We were asking for $19,999 because we're kind of jokesters.
Right.
But that whole process, it really helped us hone in and see that people were interested more in our project. So it's almost like putting a survey out whether people are behind you or not, and I think people were totally behind what we were doing.
And so, what did that Kickstarter enable you to do? How did you expand your business after that?
Yeah, so it allowed me to, we were putting everything into kegs individually. So I had 5-gallon kegs, and I was putting everything in a 5-gallon keg. Well, it allowed me to buy these larger tanks and do about 200 gallons at a time. So it increased my volume and turnover and cut labor pretty significantly. And then on top of that, two, 3 months later, I had applied for a USDA grant and received that for $80,000. And that allowed me to buy bottling equipment.
Ah, the key. Bottling equipment, very, very important. And they're really cute bottles, too. I was looking at the pictures of them online, and I've seen them out in shops. They're very cute, this kind of retro label that's really fun and very, very eye-catching. So what is next for Wisco Pop?
Well, right now we're working on getting in. Well, we've just started to enter the Chicago market. We're in Medici Pizza, what's the name of the, Demos Pizza, and we've been working with a distributor down there called Natural Direct. So we're really trying to move into that. Then we'll be moving into some other markets like Mariano Market and Metro Market, I think, is in the Chicago area. So we're just working on the Midwest and trying to gather as much market share in the natural food sector as we can.
Yeah. And remind us where you're based.
We're in a really cool hippie town called Viroqua, Wisconsin. It's about 30 minutes south of La Crosse.
Yes.
And a lot of people from Chicago like to come out here and visit because it's so beautiful, these rolling hills and stuff out here.
Definitely. We all need a break and need a little bit of nature in our lives. And so there's also it seems like a lot of other food and beverage startup going on in that area where you are. That seems like there's a bit of a cooperative going.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely everybody here is food-minded. And I know that we're in Vernon County, which is the highest organics for Wisconsin. So this is the county that produces all the organic produce. So it's really a unique area. There's a lot of interesting things going on here. You've got Organic Valley, which is just did $1 billion in sales last year. And you've got Kickapoo Coffee, which is another cool business in town here. Yeah.
Speaks to the group mind of that area for sure. And so where can people go to find out more about Wisco Pop?
Yeah, you can visit us on our website at wiscopopsoda.com. And, of course, we have a Facebook page, which is really easy to enter in on Google there.
Wonderful. All right. Well, we will all see you there. Thanks very much for being with us, founder of Wisco Pop.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Still lots to talk about on the program, and of course we're going to be checking in upstairs in the newsroom as headlines and weather and traffic and all those good things come together for us. We will definitely keep you updated. Now joining us by phone, we have a very special guest with us, and that is Brian Floriani. He is the executive director and founder of Bernie's Books. You can find out about this at berniesbookbank.org. And it's named for Dr. Bernard Floriani, who is the father of the executive director. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the program.
Have me today.
Certainly. Thanks for being with us. And so Bernie's Book Bank collects, processes, and distributes new and gently used children's books around Chicagoland. So tell us more about your organization.
Yeah, well, I think all of us, when we're trying to get wherever we're trying to go in life, we literally read our way to a better life. And for those of us that have children, that we have tons of books in our home, and our job is just to make sure that children all over Chicagoland, from birth through sixth grade, are book owners, 12 books a year from birth through sixth grade, to make sure that they have the resources necessary to become reading ready and then become reading proficient. And so that's what we do as an organization. Right now we're serving 250,000 children all over Chicagoland with 12 books a year from birth through sixth grade. It's a lot of fun, and the feedback we're getting from these children and from the schools and the WIC facilities where we primarily serve is just overwhelming.
I really, really love this. I think children's books are so wonderful, and it's so wonderful to get children involved in reading and excited about it early on. And there's so much data that shows doing that really, really helps you cognitively and academically later on, which is really so important. But, you know, I was looking through your website. There's so much great information, and there was a line that stuck out to me that I really, really loved. It said, Bernie's Book Bank is the logistical bridge between where books are today and are no longer being used to where they are not but are desperately needed. And I think that seems to sum up your organization so wonderfully. So take us through the process. If someone is listening and says, oh my gosh, I have so many children's books, I would love to pass them on. What are the steps and where? How does that book travel?
Right, absolutely. So the good news with all this is that the supply of unutilized children's books, new and used, outweighs the demand, meaning there are hundreds of thousands of children who don't grow up with books in their home. That's the bad news. The good news is the supply outweighs the demand. It's a logistical problem. And so we source books, and then we process them, and then we distribute them. And what that means is whether it's through book drives or whether it's people bringing in books to our facility, whether they're collecting books at home, or whether it's developing robust relationships with publishers who really want to solve this problem, we get our hands on those books. We bring in about 100,000 books every week. We have a 35,000 square foot facility up in Lake Buff that we serve the entire Chicagoland area from. And in that facility, we host more than 5,000 volunteer hours a month there. It could be individuals, churches, synagogues, corporations, civic groups, where they purge the books for quality and content, level them out into age-appropriate categories. For us, that would mean pre-first grade, second and third grade, fourth and fifth grade, and sixth grade. And then they are packaged for distribution, and we primarily distribute, as I said before, through WIC, which stands for Women, Infant, Children. It's a national health program, and that's how we get to the 0 to 5-year-olds. And then we pick them up in the schools based on the free and reduced lunch program. And what those two programs allow us to do is to reach hundreds of thousands of children in an effective and efficient way, and they're already pre-qualified. So we're just piggybacking on infrastructure that already exists. So we do that, and then we repeat. And so we try to make it easy and simple for people to plug in and to have an impact.
And according to your website, in 2015, you distributed over 2 million books. And what are you up to now as we're heading into 2017?
So we're on pace now to be distributing. We plan to distribute more than 4 million books next year. The idea here is to create a model that we replicate in every major city in the country, where we're serving every at-risk child in that metropolitan area with 12 books every year. The 4 million plus would we believe would cover the estimated more than 400,000 at-risk children here in Chicagoland, and then we hope to start putting the plans together to replicate the model. You know, we worked really hard to apply business and logistics concepts to this model. We worked really hard to act like a business and think like a brand. So we're excited about the progress we've made, but really the runway that we've created to do much bigger things.
And you're partnering with some pretty large sponsors. I see Chicago Bears. I see Barnes & Noble. Who else are you partnering with, and what role have they played in your organization?
Right. So it's amazing. I mean, we started in my garage 7 years ago. We've made tremendous progress over those 7 years, and it wouldn't be without the help of so many companies, family foundations, and individuals. Some of our biggest sponsors are Wintrust Banks and AbbVie and KPMG and Allstate, Walgreens. And what we try to do is to be a power strip of plug-ins so that we're easy to connect with and to plug into and to have a huge impact, whether it's a little bit of ambition you have or whether it's a lot of ambition you have. So we work really hard to be people's partners, not their charities. And that means that it's a sustainable relationship, and we want to be equally as valuable to the people helping us as they are to us.
You're so quotable. I've been writing down things you've said. I loved "read our way to a better life," and then you just said "a power strip of plug-ins." I love that as a way to describe an organization. And so, in the time that we have left, why did you name the organization after your father?
Yeah. I think it started when he and my grandmother passed away on the same day 11 years ago. I was asked to eulogize both of them. That happened within an hour on the same day. That kind of changed the direction of my life and what I was supposed to be doing. I spent some time in an at-risk school. I thought I wanted to be an elementary school teacher, learned a ton there. And really it was the intersection of that experience and then where my dad came from. So my dad grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Both of his parents are immigrants. His dad was a coal miner for 51 years, and my dad didn't have running water until he went to college. But he went on to get his doctorate and put all three of us through college. And my life is very different than his life in one generation. And so in order to honor him, it was named Bernie's Book Bank. But really, you know, my dad is not unique. He's like millions of children of immigrants that came to America looking for a better way. But really who he represents to me today are the hundreds of thousands of children we now serve in Chicagoland. They just need a great start. They just need a little hands up in the beginning of their educational career. And then he represents millions of children all over America that I believe deserve a legitimate pursuit of happiness. And if they're going to pursue happiness in a legitimate way, they need to be able to read and gather information and be educated. And so we're just one, I think, very important spoke in that wheel. And we're just grateful to have that opportunity to be so.
You know, Brian, I have a rule that there's no crying on the Wintrust Business Lunch, but you're tempting me to break that rule because that's such a touching story, and it seems so clear now why and how you're able to accomplish so much with such a powerful story behind it and such a lovely tribute to your father. Everybody, head to berniesbookbank.org, and you can find out how to get involved, how to get your books into that system. I know we all have some books sitting around that could go find a new life with a child who needs them. And so I'm sure you can find out about volunteer opportunities there as well. Correct, Brian?
That's exactly right. We need three things: books, volunteers, and funding. And I think there's a way for everybody to plug in. And we're just so grateful and blessed to be able to serve.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, everybody. Again, that's berniesbookbank.org. And we'll also put that up on the website. Thanks for being with us today. Brian Floriani, founder and executive director of Bernie's Book Bank.
Thank you.
And that does it for us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's get you up to news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGN Radio.